Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast about Watford FC, brought to you by The Athletic. My name is John. We've just watched on television. Well, I have watched television. Colin has. Colin, you on a television?
Yeah, on a television, yeah.
Not Teletech, that's fine. But Mike was at the game. Mike, it was a great game on lots of different ways. A niggly game on other ways. It ended 1-1, which everyone's probably frustrated about. But, you know... I wrote down very early on, oh, it's feisty. It was a little more than feisty, really, wasn't it?
In these strange and uncertain times, John, it's lovely to know that we can rely on one thing, and that's Bournemouth to be absolute manna from the mouth of Hades themselves. Yet another contentious fixture against our old friends from down the road. Some things don't change, do they? A few of the faces might change, but the DNA certainly hasn't, has it?
It really hasn't. Yes, there were definitely some yellow cards given out. Could there have been some reds? I think so as well. Everything sort of conversation seems to be online is aiming towards the referee for maybe not getting those things sorted out sooner, Mike?
And rightly so, John. I mean, what an absolute abomination of a challenge after 90 seconds of the game. Appalling is the only way to describe it. The ref hasn't got a proper view of it, then why has he booked him? The linesman needs to help him out. It was just an appalling challenge. We don't need to talk about it for any longer than that, because it should have been a red card and Bournemouth should have been down to 10 men after 90 seconds of the match. I don't think anyone, Bournemouth fan, Jason Tindall, the ref watching it back, I don't think anyone, having seen the replay, would argue that it was an appalling challenge. And of course, it's then you have to, right at the other end of the game, with 90 seconds left of the game, he's the one that has the shot that ends up with the equaliser going in. So a hard one to take. And he should have been sent off again later in the game for a second yellow for a pullback on Saar, for which the referee didn't even give a free kick. I mean, the guy had a fistful of his shirt. You could see it's sort of the material stretched. So the linesman's seeing that. And to not even give a foul... and not the yellow card, again, is a quite appalling decision. Just very, very poor. Another dreadful challenge later in the game. I think it was Billing on Cleverly, which could have been and should have been a straight red. Studs on the...
And the one just before that, where he elbowed Parisa in the jaw, that was a straight red as well, and he didn't get booked on either occasion. Amazing.
The referee has made some appalling decisions throughout the game, and I don't think we need to debate it. I think everyone will have seen it on TV. It's incredibly frustrating as a Watford supporter, obviously. Bournemouth will no doubt have enjoyed it, but the slightly frustrating thing, and I think we have to caveat this with Watford have done this before as well. Watford know how to play the game. We've done it before, but there was a concerted attack on Ismail Assar. He was obviously highlighted as an attacking talent, as a threat, and they target him throughout. That's up to them if they want to do it. It's no surprise to us that a Bournemouth side, they look at every aspect of the game, shall we say, and maximising every single advantage they can physically get. Jason Tindall still marching up and down the in and out of his technical area, speaking to anyone, any official that will listen at any given opportunity. We know what we get with these guys by now, but the officiating left a lot to be desired. Really disappointing, frustrating. But I think you just have to leave it at that. There's no debate to be had. They could have been down to eight or nine men, really.
Well, as you say, Mike, we've got it out of the way, and I think you've got it out of your system.
Oh, God, I'm so annoyed!
But let's talk about the Watford side of things. Colin, I sort of saw that team come out I looked at that team and I thought, oh, that seems a little bit more mature. I know that's easy to say because two young fellas go out and two slightly older fellas come in. They're not as old as me, so slightly hypocritical. But Colin, how did it feel for you, that Watford squad, throughout the piece?
Well, I have to say, I thought the bench looked the strongest it's looked all season. So that's a testament to players, I guess, coming back. But also taking out João Pedro and Wilmot is a risk because they've been so good in the last couple of games. But we've got another game on Tuesday. So, you know, he does have to see a squad of 18 players and pick 11, you know, according to where they are in terms of fatigue and fitness and freshness and so on. So he brought in Parisa, who I thought had a really, really good game overall. And he was also targeted, I thought, at times physically. They lumped into him quite a bit. And eventually, as everyone knows who watched the game, he had to go off with what looked like either a dislocated shoulder or something really quite unpleasant. Poor lad, he was in a lot of pain. And the other player to come in, Trus de Cong. So he came on instead of Wilmot, replaced Wilmot in the side. And yes, it did feel slightly less like a youth side, although there's nothing wrong with that. That side has been playing very well and getting good results. But I think he did that maybe because he was aware, Ivic, that we were going to face quite a physical battle. It's interesting, isn't it, John, that this game, and I've been thinking about this quite a lot, this game had all the intensity and, you know, kind of bad temperedness that I think we expected from the game against Luton, and it never really materialised in that game. So I do sort of wonder whether or not this current rivalry, which is now going back 6-odd years since we came up together and all the to-do around that, and then the 5 years in the Premier League, and come down together and play each other again. And there was a real intensity in this game. And I think he picked some slightly maturer heads, possibly, or some bigger lads in there to kind of deal with what he thought might be coming.
I think what we can draw from the conclusion from the side that took the field is, yes, there were a couple of changes. Ben Foster just walking past me. He hasn't got his GoPro in his hand, so I don't think I'm going to feature in this in this video, unfortunately. Hello, Mum. I think what, you know, this is a side with a couple of changes, which, like, as Colin said, is going to happen, but was definitely... Oh, he is filming.
There's an edit, Mike. He won't put you through that.
Oh, I've gone all giddy. It's the cycling GK. But in all seriousness, this is a side that we can, you know, have high hopes for, that we can be confident in. And, you know, we've got players to come back. Hughes, Deeney, Gray, who I think would have made an impact today. But the fabulous thing, I think, is, as a Watford supporter, you're right, John, there are changes. But every change is strategic. Every change, I think, is made, A, to do battle with the team that's in front of them today. And I think a couple of wiser heads were needed today. But also thinking ahead to the next game, because that is the juggling job of a head coach in the Championship. And I think what it does say, now the dust really has settled after the transfer window shut, what it says is, this is a good squad, and as supporters we can be confident in what lies ahead in depth throughout the pitch. And I think whatever team takes to the field, we can be confident, happy and excited.
Let's talk about the goal though, Colin, because it came from Mr. Sarr, who was starting up front with Parisa. Came across a brilliant, you know, one touch cross in, very long leg. Parisa puts his foot out and it's a goal. I mean, together as a partnership, they went straight away.
They did, and it's very interesting, and I was sort of analysing the goal and how he scored that goal. Cathcart was under no pressure when he got the ball at his feet. And
Craig Cathcart? I thought it was Glenn Hoddle.
Well, or was it Etienne Capou? But he wasn't on the pitch, so it couldn't have been him. A beautiful right-footed cross-ball, diagonal ball. They talked about this a lot in commentary, about the importance of diagonal balls in the Championship. Not sure why that's necessarily become a thing. But when you play three at the back, as Bournemouth did, and as we do, what tends to happen is that the two wing-backs stand in a position, once they're in their shape, they tend to stand in a position 3 or 4 yards ahead of the three centre-backs who are in a line, as they should be. And this happened. Enrico was standing about 3 yards ahead, out there on the left, but, you know, 3 yards ahead of his centre-backs. And Sarr very cleverly allowed himself just to sort of drift past Rico and get into that little space behind him, but still onside, because Rico was 3 yards ahead of his own centre-backs. So when Cathcart put the ball in, it did seem like a kind of wonder ball, but there was a lot of space for him to aim at. Nevertheless, great ball, great first touch. Rico completely out of the game and backtracking because he's taken up a position where he should really be level with Sarr, but he's allowed Sarr to get in behind him. Great first touch, great ball across the box, and Parisa literally had to sprint every, and he got there with about a millimetre to spare to get his toe on it, and it's just a fantastic goal, and it really came completely against the run of play, a bit like the game in the week. You know, they came out hard, Bournemouth. The first 10, 15 minutes, they really were trying to just batter us back into our own penalty area, which they did really effectively. But just one little moment, one tiny lapse of concentration on the part of Rico to not notice that Sarr had gone behind him. And boom, you know, Watford can get a goal. We can score those goals with that kind of quality. And after that, that did slightly bring Bournemouth up a bit, and they started to, like, take a bit more care of what was going on behind them, and it slowed the game down, I thought.
You mentioned Rico a lot there, Colin. I think, as from a Watford supporter's point of view, I think a lot of the credit needs to go, yes, Cathcart picked the ball, he still had to find Sarr. Incredible first touch, like, reminiscent really of the second on Wednesday, where he did well, it was to bring it under control. And then the ball in was, if you grab a football dictionary and look up perfect, I think they've just torn out the page that was in there and put in a gif of that ball in, because it was absolutely sublime. And I think as we talked last week about how on Wednesday about how João Pedro is growing into games, the reaction from Ismaïla Sarr this afternoon to that awful challenge early on was, it could have been to sort of get sulky, head down and complain to the ref. What he actually did was rolled his sleeves up and thought, right, I'm going to do my talking on the pitch. And I thought he really did. I thought this was a fantastic performance from Ismaïla Sarr. And as Watford supporters, we've been through the mill over the transfer window. We've gone through the relegation. We've had to worry about keeping our best players. We've kept Sarr, and we're starting to see just how good he can be. That goal was such a joy to behold. It really was. It was simple in many respects, but the execution was fabulous. Absolutely glorious.
But it is also a testament to the canniness of Sarr that he can see where the fullback is, and he can just edge his way forward so he can get into a position where if the ball comes, the fullback's going to have to turn to chase him, by which time he's long gone. And I think that's about tactical awareness. It's about positional awareness. I mean, this is a young boy, but his maturity, his kind of way he puts himself in the pitch. And I mean, he overall did a lot of work today, and he found himself on the left and at the back, and he was putting in tackles. But that little moment of thinking, I can just edge myself into this position, he hasn't noticed me, a bit like grandmother's footsteps, you know. And when the ball comes, he's ready and he's gone. And fantastic goal.
You're right to mention he was all over the pitch, because I think he put in defensive work as well, which we haven't necessarily seen. And I loved it today from Ismaïla Sarr. I think that was a real highlight as far as I'm concerned. Just to see him all popping up all over the place, wanting the ball, doing the work. And it was interesting, Vladimir Ivic, they're very... They know what they're supposed to do, from restarts, from set plays, and when the opposition is in possession in certain parts of the field. You can really see it here at Vicarage Road, and Ivic is gesturing, making sure that people are in the right position depending on what the phase of play is or what is about to happen. And he talks to Ismaïla Sarr a lot when Bournemouth are encroaching forward, moving forward the ball, and if they pass, he's like, go. Very sort of direct instructions, and I just thought the way he stuck to his task today was admirable, especially considering the treatment that was dished out. He did his talking on the pitch, and I'm full of admiration, but also even more excited that we're just starting to see Ismaïla Sarr really, really flourish. I thought he was brilliant today, brilliant.
I think, Mike, he had what, to coin your phrase, he had his season in a microcosm, because it was what he's going to get in terms of doing and scoring some goals and being exciting and being our outlet, but also he's going to get kicked a few times.
He's going to get some treatment.
Colin, defensively though, you know, I know we let goal in at the end, but for as Mike, you know, as you said, we, you know, Bournemouth upped their game when they went behind, but we coped with them. We absolutely coped with them. How?
It's a question of philosophy, partly in the week prior to a game. I mean, he's getting them so well drilled. Again, something that was said on the commentary quite regularly throughout the whole game was, my word, Watford are well organised. It's impossible to get through them. But what I really noticed today, and I think I noticed it really properly for the first time, because I know in the Blackburn game we were a little bit, I think, taken by surprise by their kind of offensive energy against us, and there were times where we were being pulled left, right and centre, and managed to stand up and win that game. But in this game, I have to say, I thought that back line and the three in front and the two wing backs and the forwards as well, it looks like we really enjoy defending. And I think that's something that Ivic has really brought to the club. Normally, defending is seen, you know, it's left mostly to the specialist defenders. And it's something that, you know, you're kind of supposed to do, come on, track back, give your tackles in, da, da, da. And some players are not that keen or not that bothered. They go, well, it's not really my job. I'm up here. I'm here to score goals. But this team really does defend from the front all the way to the back, and there was times when it just looked like that's what they wanted. It was like, we want this, come on then, come on, keep having a go at us, keep putting the ball over the top. And there were times where we pushed them back in midfield, they had to play long balls in, which I thought we dealt with pretty well. But then the times where they did get into our third, off, you know, into their final third, there was always an extra man coming in from the side, coming in from behind, covering his mate, working hard for each other, making sure that when opportunities arose, you know, they would have to be perfect in order to score. And most teams never achieve that kind of perfection. So, you know, Solanke had a couple of headers, which he didn't manage to pull off. King had a couple as well. But mostly it just looked like we were up for it. And when you look back, and this is the last time I'm ever going to mention last season, John, I promise you, but when you look back to last season, if we'd had that kind of attitude amongst the side, we wouldn't have conceded first in all nine games after we came back after lockdown. If we'd had an attitude where we defend as a team, we go into the trenches against far better opposition, of course, we didn't really show that attitude. And in this game, we really looked like they were not just rolled up sleeves, but smiles on their faces. Come on, you think you can get through us? We've only conceded two goals in six games. You're not going to score against us. We're going to fight you tooth and nail every single time. And it did, in the end, it led to a lot of frustration in that Bournemouth team, which I think in the second half led to quite a few of the nasty little tackles and challenges and elbows and whatever, because they were getting really frustrated that they couldn't get any traction against our defence. And yes, massively unfortunate that we conceded right at the end, but both teams were tiring. We were kind of hanging on and going further and further back. And eventually, you know, it was slightly lucky, I think, if Foster had managed to punch it a bit further or whatever. But anyway, they scored. But nevertheless, I think when you look at this side, what you see is a side that wants to defend, not just has to or thinks they should or, oh, well, I suppose we're under a bit of pressure, I better come back and help out. From the whistle, they all want to do that work and they all want to get up the other pitch and support players so they can score goals. And I think that is something that is very exciting.
I agree with that. And I think there was two performances for me that personified that this afternoon. And I think Jeremy Ngakia, for me, struggled a little bit in the first half. He looked like he got the wrong side a couple of times and positionally was a bit out of shape a couple of times.
Yeah.
He got visibly frustrated once or twice when Ben Foster wasn't able to do the short goal kick routine. He wanted the ball, which is a great sign, but he looked like he was struggling. And I think Truce Dekong made a couple of bad decisions a couple of times. He could have just got rid of the ball a couple of times and found himself dispossessed on the edge of the box. So those two, I think, had vaguely shaky first quarters maybe, but grew into the game fabulously. And really in the second half, William Truce Dekong was incredibly vocal. It's certain that we don't have a lot of that in this side at the moment. He was marshalling his troops very, very well, screaming at A to B, get over there, move there. So he was very much the sort of centre-back that you want, commanding centre-back presence. And I thought Ngakia, after a shaky start, really grew into the game and was a really solid performer for the most part. Again, showing himself to be an absolutely extraordinary signing from Watford, by the way. So I think that those two individuals really shone for me because they had a slightly shaky start. But I think it feeds into exactly what Colin was saying there, which is these guys know what their job is and they're relishing it because they know what the end game is. Stick to our guns, stick to the game plan, stick to the shape, and more often than not, people aren't going to score against us, and they relish it, and I think we should relish it as well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Midfield-wise, I'm in my head, I'm sort of, I know we've got several players still to come back. particularly Will Hughes, and Capoue's only just come back into the match day squad. I'm thinking, I wonder, you know we're not going to get to do this because we're going to play so many games, there's going to be rotation of players. Who would be the first pick midfield if we had just one game a week? And I suppose no one's particularly doing that or has done that over every single game. Nathaniel Chalabar got his man of the match from Don Goodman on the telly. What was it about him today, Colin? I mean, it was a good day for him. Was it the fact that he sat back a little bit more? He was deeper?
Well, I think Ivic has put him in that position. I think he wants him to play in front of the back three. He sees that as his role. He's obviously very interested in how a team defends their goal, Ivic, that is, as a coach. That's something that they were saying in commentary about how he'd won the two titles in Israel and they conceded like 10 goals in 30-odd games or whatever it was. It's incredible stats. And so it's obviously part of his football DNA that this is how he likes to set his teams up. And in order to be that good at that, you have to have players that are willing in midfield to sit and do a lot of dirty work. And there was one moment, I think, in the first half where the ball came into the box, and I think it was to Josh King with his new Buffon hairdo, which I quite enjoyed. And it looks like he can turn and shoot, and he's going to get a shot off, and he's about 8 or 9 yards out from goal. And out of nowhere, really, from midfield, Chalabar comes in, nips the ball off him and recycles it. That was something that Chalabar did a lot today, and he's protecting the back three, but again, he seems to be relishing the role. And it may be something simple, like Ivic says, this is your job. Don't worry about anything else. A bit like we said when Grazia came in and sorted us out after that terrible start or that terrible middle part of the season under Silva. Says to Chalabar, this is your job. This is where I want you to work. I want you to keep an eye on Garner, who's a young, inexperienced player. I want you to be the man in front of the back three that is going to break things up. If you're able to do that, if you can sniff out danger, if you can spot where the ball's going to go, that allows Tom Cleverley, if he's playing Garner or Capoue or whoever comes in, Hughes, to go into the spaces further forward. That is your job. Do it. And I think when you have a really clear instruction like that, and I'm assuming that's what's happened, every day in training, he's only got one thing to think about. Right, how am I going to read this training session? Where's that ball going? I know, obviously, they know each other, so they know how each other plays. It's different when you play against genuine opposition. But if you have that attitude, I know where the space is. I know where they're trying to do. I've looked at the videos. I know how they like to get into the final third. I'm going to be there to stop it. I'm going to cut off the supply. I'm going to nick the ball. I'm going to put that tackle in. I'm going to recycle the ball. I know Jeremy Ngakoue is going to be in space to my right. I know that Ken Semmer or Kiko will be on the left in space. Or I've got my mate, Troostekong Kong or Wilmot next to me. I know what I can do. I can knock it forward, a short pass into Cleverley and get it back and then recycle it again. Once you start thinking about basically a 10-metre square in front of your own box and that is your land, that's your house, then I think you have a lot of freedom and it can give you a lot of confidence. And I thought today he took a yet another step forward. I know I mentioned him in the pod after the Blackburn game saying that I thought we were beginning to see something, and I thought he took a big step forward today against, frankly, better opposition. I mean, Blackburn had all the energy and attacking will, but Bournemouth matched them for that. But Bournemouth had, I thought, a little bit more quality in certain areas that made it more difficult for us to play that kind of defence, have that kind of defensive solidity. But I thought he was excellent today. I think he really deserved man of the match. I'm really delighted to see him playing well. I know that we sort of always thought of him as a slightly more attacking player, but I think that Ivic, like coaches do, they spot a player, they see some quality, they see a certain type of quality in a player, and they say, right, this is what I want you to do. This is your job. In the way that Pearson took Decore out of a defensive position alongside Capoue and pushed him further up the pitch, and that worked for Decore. With Chalabar, what Ivic has said is, no, this is your 10-metre square in front of the back three, and I want you to marshal it, like, you know, to make sure that you cut supply, you don't let them get easy ball, easy space, easy passes. That is your job. And I thought he did it really, really well today.
He had more of a job to do today as well, I think, because I think Garner got a little bit overexcited at times. He sort of was here, there and everywhere, and I love his energy, but he wasn't quite as, you know, you've just described a very disciplined player and a disciplined performance there, Colin. And I think James Garner perhaps showed a little bit of his inexperience today and ended up being substituted at half time. But that, when players do, you know, it wasn't a bad performance by any stretch of the imagination from Garner, but it did mean that Chalabar had to step up that little bit more because there was no more room for error. And the other thing, just to close off on Chalabar, is that he knows that Capoue and Hughes are breathing down his neck, and it's now or never. He's the man in possession of the shirt at the moment, and he needs to perform. You know, on a mental level, he will know that, and he will know that he needs to perform. If he gets ousted by Kapoor and Hughes, it's difficult to get back in, isn't it? So fair play to him. I thought that was terrific today, both from that point of view and in managing the game, because, I thought James Garner was a little bit off it and was replaced by Kapoor at half-time.
I think one of the interesting things about today's performance was the bench and how he used the bench. As Mike's just pointed out, Garner was on a yellow card and he'd also just put in another tackle, and the referee was kind of raising an eyebrow thinking, that's a bit borderline. So I think Ivic thought, I don't want to get a player sent off. So off he came. Kapoor came on. I mean, what an incredible player to have on the bench. I don't think he can play 30, 46 games in a season, so he'd have to use him wisely. But he came on, he brought a certain amount of calmness, a bit of quality, but, you know, he's got that nasty side to him as well. He's up for the fight, Etienne. He's not going to take anything off anybody. So he's got a lot to his game, and I thought he improved us. And then later on in the game, when Cleverley started to tire, he brought on Queener, and Queener actually came on. And I know that we're not sure about Domingos Queener.
No,
is it
Queener?
We're not quite sure whether he's going to be a great player for us in this league, or whether, you know, there's a lot of kind of there's quite a bit of star quality about him at times. But is he really going to be disciplined and a good enough player to? But today he came on, and again I was a bit concerned. Cleverley is our captain. He'd had another good 65 minutes or 70 minutes, and Queener came on, and I thought he was really lively. He got hold of the ball well. He took the ball forward. He likes to shoot quite a bit of pressure on a couple of occasions, forced him into good saves, and that scared Bournemouth a little bit. It's like, oh, there's a player on the pitch and he's actually going to shoot the ball at our goal, and we're not sure, and we don't even know who he is and where is he. He's got the ball and he's passed it and he's got it back, and they were kind of running around Keane trying to figure out how to deal with him. And then at the end, when Parisa very sadly fell, it was no fault of the defender, to be fair. I don't think he was chasing after him. He sort of fell, and he just fell really badly on his arm and shoulder with it outstretched. To bring on a player like Pedro, who played only 3 days ago, we know what he can do. And again, when he came on, I thought he was lively, but he was, you know, he was clever. So when we've got a bench that's got that kind of quality on it, and when Ivic is willing to use it, you know, and it, in certain moments, and trust that you can bring on Domingos Queener for Tom Cleverley, who must be a player that Ivic must look at as a central pillar in this side, Tom Cleverley, that is. But to trust his substitute and go, on you go, do this, do that, you know, help us out in this situation. I think that again just speaks very well for our squad, for Ivic, for the club generally, and for our excitement at watching this team going forward.
I think Queen is another one who grasped the metal pretty admirably today. I thought he buzzed around with real energy today. And it was quite telling, I thought. He got two good shots off, forced Begovic into two quite awkward saves, didn't he? But it was quite jarring to see him have to make the save, because, and this isn't a criticism, but Watford do not ask many questions, well, they didn't today, of Begovic, did they? And I think that's how it's going to be this season, which is absolutely fine. You can be in control of a game at 0-0. You can be in control of a game at 1-0 as well. Unfortunately, we weren't able to see it out today, and we are going to have to cut out those mistakes, he says, stating the obvious. But I thought he was another player who has perhaps been a little bit on the periphery so far in this campaign, but really came on and felt like he was following instructions that were tailored for this game. Get there, buzz around, make a nuisance of yourself, and get your shots off when you can. And he did. But it just did feel to me, does this Watford side need to create more? And I think the answer is yes, if we're going to win more games. Also, rationalising that with the way that we play, and it is a trade-off. And I think we will get better at it as the season goes on. And I hate to keep going on about players to come back, but you do think about someone like perhaps Andre Gray coming on when Parisa went off. I actually thought he had a vaguely disappointing afternoon, Parisa, apart from his goal. I think he went down a little bit easily on occasion, and I think he'll be slightly frustrated. But perhaps if Andre Gray comes on instead of João Pedro, who did admirably. There was one minute though, at one stage where they were retreating. I think it was a goal kick, and sort of Pedro was ambling back, and virtually the entire Watford team was going, "Sell! Sell! Sell!" And that just goes back because he hadn't dropped back into that position that they all know where they're supposed to be from every sort of restart. They know where, and he'd switched off momentarily. I thought it was quite amusing, but also very, very telling as to just how drilled they were. "Sell! Sell!" I think I almost started joining in. I didn't know where he was supposed to be, but I just wanted to tell him something.
the depth of this squad is great. There's different options offering different things, and I'm really pleased that we saw that good performance from Queen. I thought he was one who did his future sort of hopes of staying in the squad no harm at all. I thought he was good.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
Remember, if you haven't yet subscribed to the Athletic, you can get a remarkably good deal at the moment for just £1 a month if you go to theathletic.com/rookeryend. And as part of that, you get to see the readings of Mr. One, Adam Leventhal, who joins us now. Good afternoon, Adam.
Good afternoon. Was that Juan Adam Leventhal? Am I
new? Juan, yes.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, no, I'm all good. How are you doing, gents?
Very good. Where are you? Still at Vicarage Road, or have you left yet?
I've been writing in the car park of Vicarage Road. It's now teeming down with rain, and it's quite a few hours after the game has finished. But I've just been sort of going through some of the interesting incidents from the game. And sort of stepping into a world where if we had VAR, things might have been a little bit different.
Well, let's see what Vlad had to say after the game, which, as we've already discussed with Colin, had some incidents.
We can be disappointed with the result because we could see the goal in the extra time. I believe that we worked hard during the 95, 96 minutes. We were very good in our defensive movement. We tried to attack the space, what we create for our players in front. I believe that we had a very good chance. The best chance it was with Sar when he has walked tête-à-tête with the keeper. When you missed after 1-0, two chance, normally that's what you want to keep this result. You know, in the last minutes, we go back, we go to protect the 1-0. Again, I'm pleased with the behavior of my player because their work, they give their maximum. And, you know, it was one moment in the second pieces where we lose the players. And I don't know now what's happened there with Ben Foster when he kicked the ball. You've seen this situation. Maybe it could be then the foul after the touching with the ball when he put the ball out, three players go to him. But okay, it's the game. We need to be realistic. We need to know that we play against one very good team who play together 3-4 years. We know that they have a quality player, especially in front, powerful player who can score the goal from every position. And I believe that they didn't create something against us. Don't remember some chance that they are create. We had two or three chances in the second half. And we know that set pieces in the part of the game where we need to be ready. Previous game against Blackburn, they had two, three good chances. Today, we didn't pay our confusion previous game, but we paid today and we need to learn from this.
How was he, though, in himself, Adam? Was he overly worried and upset?
No, I think he was quite calm. He always is quite calm and measured, you know, and as you heard there, I think he was right to highlight the fact that overall, you know, for 96 of the 97 minutes that were played, you know, Watford defensively were pretty solid. And, you know, that was with Bournemouth having a lot of the ball and sort of threatening from the edge of the penalty box. They didn't really create that many opportunities, did they? So I think he was quite happy. But then towards the end of the news conference, he did get a little bit heated. And it was quite interesting because, you know, he, at the end of the game, actually went over to the referee, and everyone's naturally thought, oh, well, that is because he was angry about, you know, something that happened around the goal. You know, he did actually say that he thought maybe Ben Foster might have been fouled and things like that. But what he'd actually been speaking to the referee about was that he felt that the whistle might have been blown a little bit too soon at the end of the game, and Watford had the chance for a 2-on-2 counter-attack. I mean, my own personal opinion is that I was quite grateful for the whistle to blow, because I thought that Bournemouth looked more likely to score. But he said, look, you know, I thought that maybe we might have been allowed to have that counter-attack. So I've gone through that. I've gone through the VAR incidents as well for the latest piece for The Athletic. And it's been, it's a very difficult one, actually. And I talk about it in the piece, that basically you go, yeah, VAR could have completely changed the game. Loy Kelly wouldn't have been on the pitch. Philip Billing potentially might not have been on the pitch as well. There's a couple of challenges and stills that I've looked at, and I know that, you know, stills aren't the reality, but just looking at it, and that's what VAR would have looked at, you know, he might have struggled to also be on the pitch as well. But you also think, God, when we did have VAR, it was painful at times. You had the dithering, you had the delays, you had the drawing of lines and everything. And although it's a little bit difficult to take, and Watford probably would have won this game if things had been different and there had been VAR, it's actually quite nice not to have it for a season. And that's basically the sort of the conclusion of my piece, that, yeah, things could have been different, but I quite like it without it.
I definitely like it without it.
I mean, you could argue that VAR actually played a huge part in Watford getting relegated as well. Even in games that Watford weren't involved in, you know, Aston Villa got a draw against Sheffield United when Sheffield United demonstrably scored. You know, there's a sliding scale of the impact of, that VAR had on Watford throughout the season, isn't it? But I totally agree. I think they're watching them back, absolutely dreadful. But VAR wouldn't necessarily, for example, the one with a tug back on Ismaïla Sarr, from one side, from the Elton John stand side, it wasn't necessarily that obvious. It looked like Sarr's just gone down. From the Sir Elton John side, where I was sat and you were sat, Adam, you could see the guy had a fistful of his shirt and pulled him back. And that would have been evident very, very quickly on a second camera angle. But if you're Forest Green Rovers or Cheltenham or somewhere like that, there's not going to be multi cameras. So you would see that one perhaps angle and still get the wrong decision. So for me, I think it's still the right thing not to have it at the moment. It doesn't work. It's ruining the game as a spectacle for supporters, leading to more scratching of heads and gnashing of teeth than whatever the opposite of that is. So I'm glad we haven't got it. And as for punishments, John, I think there is one punishment that the ref will have meted out, and that's that he will have to watch that again. And he will realise very, very quickly he's made an enormous mistake after 90 seconds. And there's no, you mentioned Philip Billing, Adam, but I've had a chance to watch the two instances. He elbows Parisa. You could argue how much contact there was, but there is a movement. He makes a definitive move with his elbow towards his face. And the one on Cleverley was appalling as well. So it's either two reds or at the very least two yellows. And the refs got completely lost control of it, made four very, very bad decisions. But I'd still, despite that, glad we don't have VAR, because it doesn't solve it. We know that further down the line, we might have got justice today, but on Tuesday at Wickham or the week after that or the week after that, one would have gone against us that shouldn't have done. And it's just the way it is. Everyone is being wronged by VAR, and that shouldn't be. The reason it was brought in is that no one should be wronged. And it just, that's just not the case at all. So I'd rather have the nonsense that we saw today than the even graver nonsense of VAR, quite frankly. So, Adam, you get to watch these games firsthand because, of course, you are part of the media, Watford's correspondent for The Athletic. And a Watford player has taken his first sort of concrete step, shall we say. He's been tentatively skirting around the media for a little while, but now he's signed a deal. We know he's staying at Watford. He's now signed a deal for TalkSport and The Sun. So our captain, Troy Deeney, is firmly entrenched in that media camp now. How do you rate his first week in that world? And what does he need to look at? You're a man who understands that world. You've covered a lot of sports for a lot of different outlets, radio stations, TV stations, and now the written form. What advice have you got for Troy as well?
Oh, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. I think first and foremost, you know, you analyse the reason why he's in this position now. You know, you look back, and he's always been outspoken, but it was the moment when he was in the TV studio, I think, that really sort of lifted his profile when he mentioned about Arsenal's cojones and things like that. And then I think that's where the wider public started to think, oh, hang on a minute, I want to hear what Troy Deeney has to say. And then at all his post-match interviews, he is very honest, he's very open, sometimes a little bit too open. And I think he even mentioned that on Hive Live when he was in the studio with Emma Saunders, you know, that sometimes he can be a little bit too honest. But that really appeals to both newspaper editors and also radio producers. You know, they want someone that's going to come on and is going to create a debate, really. The thing with it is that it's very difficult if you are still within the game. And we've seen it already with Troy. I think he's spoken a little bit out of turn about some of his fellow professionals before. I mean, some people will say, yes, a lot of people might have agreed about the Cajones comment, but is it his place to talk about Arsenal in that way. More recently, over this summer, talking about Sebastian Haller and talking about Joel Linton and their value and how many goals they've scored and sort of ranking himself alongside them when he was injured and he'd effectively scored, you know, as many goals or maybe more. I don't necessarily know if that's the wisest thing to do. And you can sometimes get a little bit too carried away with the fact that, yes, you're honest and you're brutal and, you know, I don't have to hide away from anything that I say because I can back it up and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's just a little bit, sometimes it's a little bit too close to the bone. And I'm very intrigued to see how he's going to manage that, because TalkSport, and I've worked for TalkSport myself, more sort of just doing straight football reporting, not causing controversy or anything like that. But, you know, they like red line debates. They want one side and they want the other. And you know, him speaking about, you know, when it was introduced, when he was alongside Laura Woods, there was a couple of moments where, yes, he's talking about Fred and he's basically sort of hanging him out to dry a little bit. But then he's very honest about Paul Pogba and saying, you know, I like him and I think he's their best player. And then when he was asked about and he was talking about, you know, had there been talks with Tottenham and things like that, he got a little bit tied up because he thought, hang on a minute, I could probably tell you more than I am now, but I shouldn't really. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he handles awkward situations, because the last thing that he will want, I think, deep down, and obviously the club will want, is for him to cause issues simply by talking and people putting demands on him to be controversial. And, you know, that comes into what he's going to write in the newspaper as well. You know, it's not a lot of people's cup of tea that he's going to be writing for The Sun. You know, I'm not in a position to throw stones because I work for, you know, a Rupert Murdoch-owned organisation for 16, 17 years at Sky Sports. So I walked into a building day in, day out that had Rupert Murdoch's name above the door. So, you know, I'm not going to criticise someone for taking a paycheck from News International, even though I probably wouldn't work for The Sun. They're not my cup of tea, to be honest. Look, it's going to be very interesting to see how it all pans out. But I just hope that, you know, as he does it, he concentrates on his honest opinions about the game. He'll be able to give great insight, but I just hope he doesn't compromise anything that's going on in terms of Watford's progress, because I don't think he will want that, and the club won't want it. The fans certainly won't want it as well, because a lot of fans have highlighted the fact that it doesn't quite marry up with their hopes and expectations of this season to see their captain that hasn't yet really played, you know, signing up for big contracts like that. So the jury's still out, I think.
As a supporter, I think it's interesting, because I think we need to be careful what we wish for from our sports stars, if you like, because sometimes we're guilty of saying, oh, we don't get enough honesty, we don't get enough non-media trained sort of standard club lines from people. And you mentioned the Cojones comment against Arsenal, and I made him absolutely right. And I think he was backed up by a lot of Arsenal fans after that. He was just saying it as it was. And that was, I found it refreshing. I think a lot of people didn't. All too often you get the same, look, we're focusing on the next game. I don't talk about players who aren't contracted to my club. We'll find out what the injury is like after a scan tomorrow. You get the same lines from absolutely everyone. So for me, I think, you know, it's interesting. And I think it feeds into a wider situation at the moment with Watford and all other football clubs, really, that we're so distanced from the football club. Adam, you and I are lucky enough to get to the home games. You get to the away games as well. But as supporters, we're craving that contact that we just don't have. And with Troy perhaps doing that's another opportunity for Watford supporters and football supporters to hear from their captain. There is, of course, Ben Foster doing his amazing goalkeeper, the Cycling GK YouTube channel, which must have obviously been done with the blessing of the club, with the GoPro in the goal, which I know you mentioned in your most recent piece. I think that's absolutely fabulous. And I've mentioned it before, but Hornet Hive Live, what the club are doing before and after matches, the wrapping around with the sort of magazine show of the live action. And I think we're just seeing a change in how football supporters get their fix, if you like. And what I do think is, regardless of the rights and wrongs of Troy signing up with TalkSport and The Sun, if you combine it all together, Watford fans have actually got it pretty good at the moment, relatively speaking. they can get content from lots of different sources. Troy a bit more uncut, Ben Foster taking you behind the scenes, and then the Hive Live doing the pre and post match a bit more club centric, if you like. So I think it's worth saying that it's. We be careful what we wish for with Troy sometimes, because the game doesn't need characters. How often do you it's a tired old cliche, people say, oh, well, you know, there's no characters in the game. Troy is definitely one of those, and he's willing to put himself out there, and I'm looking forward to hearing what he says, and I think it just feeds into that wider content that the club are putting out at the moment. So interesting times nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, personally, Troy, he's got to brighten up his little voice a little bit, just because he always sounds a bit, he's a bit too laid back for my liking. and also, I think he's got to be careful, really, because you can quite easily fall into being the character that people expect you to be when you start working on the radio, where it isn't, you don't want him just to be, hey, Troy's on a Monday, let's see what his opinion is and ask him questions. He sort of needs to develop his own voice, and that takes quite a while. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops as an on-air and in-print personality in the next couple of months. Will we see him, Adam, on Tuesday?
As I understand it, I don't think he is going to be playing and ready for Tuesday. I think he's probably still at least a week away from getting back with the group. And I think we've seen with Vladimir Ivic that he's very keen to sort of integrate players back slowly. I know we got that snapshot of Troy against Luton where he just came on and barrel-chested one of their defenders out of the way. And that was quite fun. But I think, he'll want to be looking at the long term now. Now he knows that he's got this squad for however many weeks until the transfer window opens, but hopefully for the rest of the season. He'll want to make sure that when you get back, you're able to stay back. So I don't think he will be rushing him back. I suppose that the Perica potential injury, I don't know how long that's going to be, might just sort of change the narrative a little bit. But then you've got Andre Gray coming back in. So he might sort of be the next cab on the rank. And obviously, João Pedro got rotated and he'll be back and available for Wickham and, you know, will probably start rather than coming on as a sub. So I don't think there's a massive rush with Troy. So he'll have a bit more time to work on his voice.
It's one of those games, Mike, expected to win away at Wickham. I don't think it's quite a cold Tuesday night in Wickham or Stoke, whatever it is, type game. But it's one that we can't... Do you think we have to win it?
Yes, we have to win every game from now on in after dropping points this afternoon. I think it's, as a supporter, it's a game that fills you with stone-cold dread. A team that hasn't just not won this season, they've never won a single game in the Championship. As a Watford supporter, my first reaction is, well, we know who their first team they're going to beat. It's us, of course, isn't it? But under Vladimir Ivic, I don't think we are that side anymore. I don't think that enters the psyche. I don't think it ever enters the psyche of the team anyway. And it's interesting, post-match, we've had a few sort of to and fro's with fellow supporters on Twitter, some saying they're struggling to join the football. And I'm on the opposite side of that, because I can see what's happening. And I love the fact that we're grinding out these sort of pragmatic results that didn't quite come to fruition today. But I really like the fact that, first and foremost, we're really hard to beat, and defensively we are really, really strong. And ordinarily, you know, going to a team like Wickham, they should find it very, very difficult to break us down, because every team in this division should find it difficult to break us down. So them, bottom of the league, not cut adrift yet, but obviously struggling, low on confidence. But for them, this is we've said it a lot, like in our seasons in the Premier League, talked about free hits. This is a free hit for them. They won't be expecting... well, certainly their supporters won't be expecting to win. The watching sort of neutrals won't be expecting them to get anything, but they will fancy their chances of causing us some problems. So it's another big game. Every game is massive, I think, for this Watford team, because what they do need to do is build up that head of steam. You want to see incremental improvement, incremental confidence, I think, is the biggest thing. I think we missed a couple of chances up top today with Saar missing a chance that could have won us the game. And we just need to get better with each passing game. We need to take something from every game. And that's important. So we cannot afford to slip up against Wickham, because then on the heels of that, there's another game a few days later. So there can't be any excuses. If this Watford team are going to challenge at the right end, there simply cannot be any excuses. And there's no reason that this team, this squad in this form, because I think they are in decent form, shouldn't go to Wickham and win as the form book suggests. We know it's not going to be that easy, but no game is. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to every game at the moment, just because I buy into what they're trying to do, what Vladimirovic is trying to do with this squad. It's evolving, it's improving, it's revolving because it needs to. And I just find it so intriguing. Exciting is probably the wrong word, but intriguing, fascinating. And I'm there for it. I'm really enjoying it. But yeah, they'll be up for it. And I think we need to be careful. But that's the same every week, isn't it?
Thank you very much to Colin for being on part one. Thank you very much, Adam.
No problem.
And thank you, Michael.
Yeah, so it's always up for the goals.
And we'll be back after the Wickham away game for yet another podcast. We'll be here with a podcast after every Watford match this season. Thank you very much for listening. And do make sure you subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't already. Just go to theathletic.com/WickhamReend. And you'll see what Adam has to say in the next few days. We'll be back very soon. Come on, you all!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.